Welcome to OncoPharm. I'm your host, John Bazaar. I am a professor of pharmacy practice here at the supporting sponsor of OncoPharm, ETSU's Bill Gatt College of Pharmacy. It is a temperamental weather-wise day here, April 19th, 2024. It acts like it wants to rain, but acts like it wants to be sunny the next minute. Got an ambitious topic today, and that's to try to do non-small cell lung cancer in a nutshell in about 10 minutes. This was something that I said I would do last year to somebody at HOPA and was reminded I hadn't done it, and now we're going to do it. This is very much a big picture overview, you know, like from the plane looking down on the fields and rivers. So I'm not going to get in all the details. So this is very much for someone who just wants a way to kind of, you're stuck in the forest and all you see are trees and you need the ability to maybe zoom out and see the forest for what it is and see the big picture. That's the point of this. So let's start with non-small cell lung cancer. What it is not small cell lung cancer, which is the really aggressive form of lung cancer. Most lung cancers are non-small cell lung cancer. Like 85% or something like that of lung cancers are non-small cell lung cancers. And that histology includes most commonly adenocarcinoma, then squamous cell carcinoma, and then some others like large cell carcinoma. Those are the three most common, with adeno being the most common histology of non-small cell lung cancer. These patients often present later in the disease state. So stage 3 and stage 4 disease are the most common stage upon diagnosis as opposed to stage 1 and stage 2. And that is because these patients usually are smokers. Smoking causes adenocarcinoma as well as squamous cell especially, and small cell even maybe especially more. And because they're smokers, many of the symptoms of lung cancer, like cough or shortness of breath, are not unexpected in somebody with a long-term smoking history. Now, we have lung cancer screening for patients with a 20-pack year history, age 55 to 80, that can get, and they've been smoking recently, and they haven't quit smoking in the last 15 years. They can get a low-dose helical CT scan to screen for lung cancer. Uptake of that is very low, 5 to 8 to 20%. If you just search lung cancer screen uptake in PubMed, you'll see that a lot of patients are missing the opportunity for screening, which is a different podcast. Now, decades ago, this would have been the treatment for non-small cell lung cancer. We'll start with this and talk about how that's changed over time. For early stage disease, stage 1 especially, some stage 2, surgery, all right? And that can be curative. A lobectomy or a pneumonectomy, where you take out the whole lung. Now, the limitation of this, not many patients are diagnosed early in the disease course, but they also have smoked for a long time, so they have bad lungs and they're not candidates for surgery from a medical clearance standpoint in many cases. Now, following surgery, some patients, especially those that are stage 2 and 3A, could get adjuvant chemotherapy. Cisplatin and oralbine, the JBR10 study we've talked about, but a cisplatin doublet for the adjuvant chemo. There are some folks with early stage disease that's small that could receive just definitive radiation. Definitive meaning that's the only therapy and that hopefully is going to cure them. Those would be, you know, mostly small spots for patients who are not candidates medically for surgery. And then some of our stage 3 patients would get definitive chemoradiation. So this would be a scenario where we don't think the cancer is surgically resectable or the patient is medically operable, but you give them a platinum doublet along with radiation in hopes that can cure that alone. That could be cisplatin etoposide. It's kind of one of the tried and true regimens, very toxic. Cisplatin etoposide and radiation, it's basically two 28-day cycles. And then after that, there could be some consolidation chemo as well. Carboplatin paclitaxel could be used. You could use platinum and pemetrexed as well in some cases, along with the radiation therapy. And then in the metastatic setting, you would get a platinum doublet. That's what the treatment would have been 30 years ago, and that would have been the end of it, and the podcast would be over. But there are kind of three notable advances that have changed how we think about non-small cell lung cancer. The first I'll talk about is the Scagliotti paper that we mentioned on this podcast from, I think it was 2009, where there was a different treatment effect versus platinum and gemcitabine versus platinum pemetrexed, where pemetrexed did not work as well in the squamous cell population. And we since learned, after investigation, that is because squamous cell carcinomas of the lung have higher expression and levels of thymidylate synthase, which is the target of pemetrexed, and therefore pemetrexed does not work as well in squamous cell carcinoma. So that changed the treatment paradigm overnight, essentially, is that we used to just use any platinum doublet, didn't matter. Based on this, we learn that histology does matter, and if you have adenocarcinoma or large cell, pemetrexed is an outstanding option because it has a better toxicity profile than the other pairs of drugs that we would put with our cisplatin or carboplatin, like paclitaxel or etoposide. So the squamous cell patients often will get paclitaxel along with their platinum, whereas the adenos and the large cells, we really like pemetrexed because it's better tolerated. That was the first big thing. The second thing was the identification of driver mutations. So we had, you know, EGFR inhibitors like erlotinib and gefitinib approved in like the last line setting, and they had modest benefit. We're talking like maybe a 1 month improvement in median overall survival. And that was for everybody, all comers. But it was noted that certain types of people tended to do better, and these often were Asian women, non-smokers, who had adenocarcinoma as histology. And what we, in hindsight, the reason those patients did better, especially because they were non-smokers and had adenocarcinoma, is they had EGFR activated mutations. They had those exon 19 and exon 21 mutations. And that was kind of an aha moment that, hey, we maybe shouldn't give erlotinib to everybody, but to the patients who really are going to benefit from it because the drug targets an actionable mutation that is actually driving the cancer. And since then, we have had ALK inhibitors, ROS1 inhibitors, which are often the same drug, BRAF V600E inhibitors, KRAS G12C inhibitors, RET inhibitors, MET inhibitors, HER2 mutation inhibitors, HER2 overexpression with famtrastuzumab deruxtecan. There are probably others that I'm missing as well. So now, instead of having just platinum doublet, we have a plethora of potential targeted agents. And we're still, you know, if you think of how we're treating advanced non-small cell lung cancer, or really how we're using targeted therapies, these kinase inhibitors in advanced, or even all non-small cell lung cancer, if you imagine a puzzle, you know, we've dumped the piece on the board and we're still flipping everything over. You know, we know, I have a good idea that, you know, RET inhibitors work well if you have RET, you know, RET alterations. But we don't know yet, should we be checking for that earlier in the curative setting, or is it just going to have benefit in the adjuvant or in the metastatic setting? So we're still figuring that out. And it's not clear that everything will follow the same story as the EGFR inhibitors, where now we have adjuvant osimertinib is FDA approved. Just this week, adjuvant alectinib was approved for ALK mutated non-small cell lung cancer in the adjuvant setting. The third big thing were immune checkpoint inhibitors. And you can look at some of the, you know, the early studies. I call it the Adam Sandler paper, although it wasn't Adam, some A. Sandler, that added bevacizumab in metastatic non-small cell lung cancer to platinum doublet, and it improved median OS from like 10 to 12 months. As, oh, ooh, big deal. But the survival curve still went to zero. We weren't curing people, weren't changing the natural history of disease all that much. Immune checkpoint inhibitors have. And you can see 5-year overall survival rates for some of these metastatic non-small cell lung cancer patients that are robust and durable. They're not cured, but they're having good quality of life and living for years with a metastatic disease. So we know that, for example, really high expression of PD-L1 of 50% or more, you could use single agent immune checkpoint inhibitor like pembrolizumab, by adding pembro-nivo plus chemo is standard of care here in the advanced setting. And now immune checkpoint inhibitors have moved up into the neoadjuvant setting. We know for sure in combination with chemo, they pretty dramatically improve pathologic complete response rate and event-free survival. What that does long-term to overall survival, assuming you can't use them in the metastatic setting or recurrent setting, we're still waiting to figure that out. But those are, that kind of is non-small cell lung cancer in a nutshell. There are some other drugs that we've used like bevacizumab and ramucirumab as VEGF inhibiting monoclonal antibodies. We've got cetuximab and nesitumumab as EGFR inhibiting monoclonal antibodies that have really modest benefit and probably are not of much value today in the immune checkpoint inhibitor era. And our drugs we use, cisplatin in the curative setting, we always like, or carboplatin, and that carboplatin could be combined, or cisplatin with pemetrexed if it's non-squamous, so mostly adeno, or paclitaxel, nab-paclitaxel, etoposide, gemcitabine, vinorelbine, docetaxel, which has good activity in the second and third line setting and is often used there. There are some other things about like maintenance pemetrexed, you know, after you do your 4 or 6 cycles of chemo, continuing pemetrexed, You know, we have data that we don't do continuous platinum because it does become too toxic for these folks. But that is non-small cell lung cancer in a nutshell. And again, sometimes I think you can get confused looking at the algorithm and the metastatic setting because there's so much to test. But from a big picture standpoint, you know, those folks with actionable mutations, especially EGFR, it's more likely to happen in non-smokers, which is, you know, a minority of patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Most of them are going to be still patients with a heavy history and background of smoking. So that is non-small cell lung cancer in a nutshell. Got some interesting stuff to talk about next week. Maybe some CPX-351 talk. We got the adjuvant alectinib approval. A lot of interesting stuff coming out in the last week or so that I'm eager to talk about next week. Thank you all for listening. You can follow the podcast on the app formerly known as Twitter or follow me at PharmDeepNib there. You can follow the podcast on X, Threads, and Instagram at OncoPharmPod. Until I talk to you again, remember, doses matter.